Hello and welcome to the Now Spinning Magazine podcast with me, Phil Aston. And on this episode, I'm delighted to welcome back. This is going to be great for those of you who remember the first time I spoke to Pete Bingham from Sendelica. Now, Sendelica have got a brand new, I'm going to say an album. These Sendelica albums are more than albums. They're like journeys into a different universe, and they're always double albums with lots of exotic coloured vinyl and lovely artwork, and this is no exception. This is Man, Myth and Magic. Would it be right to say, Pete, it's the climax to a concept of a group of albums that you've been working on?
Well, it's the third instalment. The next one will be out later this year.
Ooh. Excellent.
And which is called Requiem for Mankind. And the first album was just an idea I had in my head where I was just thinking about a lot about religion and, you know, where religion comes from, really. And I guess it was just... man trying to understand his world, and he just made all these myths and things to warrant his place in the universe, and which is where we came up with the title "And Man Created God."
I mean, because we spoke about this last time. I mean, because where I live in Cornwall and where you live, we're surrounded by lots of kind of prehistoric stone circles and probably the origins of belief systems in a way, all these strange monuments that no one really knows what they're used for. And your music almost is the perfect soundtrack to drive towards them, to go and visit them.
Just very close to where I live, it's what's known as the magical landscape.
Yeah.
And there's lots of burial mounds and... you know, stones, circles. And it's always kind of intrigued me. You know, first of all, we're never going to know. We're never going to know what they were, why they were there. But it's also really intrigued me as to why these things were built there. Was it a magical landscape already? And that's what attracted people to build these monuments, as it was. Or did the monuments make it a magical landscape? So it's, you know, we're never going to know for sure. There's no, you know, no written documentation, but it's always just fascinated me that somebody had the power to bring all these people together to make these megaliths, really, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite a daunting task, especially when the population was so small in those days, 2,000 years ago. And it is... this has always really intrigued me, and I think that whole thing is then spurred onto the four albums, really.
Yeah, I mean, when me and my wife Sue, when we first moved to Cornwall, we were intrigued by all the kind of standing stones and stone circles and stuff. I mean, we were into like ley lines and all this kind of stuff, yeah. And Paul Devereux and his books, Places of Power, and this kind of stuff. So I think, and you always had an idea, like you saying. Some of these places are in completely really isolated areas. So was it something that drew people to, you know, that place? Or was it, as you say, they built it and then people came? Yeah. But I think this kind of segues into your music in a way, because your music, if I describe it to any of you listening or watching this, thinking, oh, you know, this is, Phil's mentioned this before, Sendelica are a progressive rock band, they're a bit psychedelic prog, and the tracks take up a whole of each side of an album. So that means that people are thinking, got to be at least 20 minutes long. Yep, you'd be right. Yeah. But where you normally think of any kind of music that's going to go down this path, there's going to be some motifs, some melodies, but there's going to be a lot of times when the band goes off and does, you know, a chunk of soloing and stuff. Sendelica don't do that. You manage to do these long pieces of music, but there isn't like somebody stepping forward to stretch out for 10 minutes and soloing, is it? It's not like that. You are completely... unique in your approach to these long pieces of music. Would you agree that you are
Yeah, well, I think that the tracks are very organic. They just kind of develop a life of their own. And there's no kind of pre kind of thing of, oh, well, we're going to have the sax solo here and we're going to have the guitar solo here, or we're going to have this. It all just becomes one kind of mesh of music. And it really fascinates me. And I do love that, you know, that the whole thing is, it is very organic.
The first track, Wheel of Fortune, is one of my favourites. I know I said previously in my review that I'm just drawn towards side four.
Yeah.
of all stuff, but actually, I seem to have swiveled over to side one now. But Wheel of Fortune is an absolutely amazing track because it's got these different sections when it goes into the driving rhythm of the drums and the guitars and everything, and then rolls back, you know, to this like little rest, and then off it goes again. When this track comes together, I mean, because I know there's so much improvisational aspects to Zendelica. How much of it is planned?
Well, I actually demo the tracks originally as a kind of, it can be anything between a 4-minute idea and a 10-minute idea, really.
Yeah.
And and then I give those to Colin, and he kind of does his little bits with them, and then he sends them back to me. And it's only when we get to the kind of idea of how long the track's going to be, where it's going to be, that we then involve the rest of the band. We get the bass player in and the sax player in, and it kind of develops all the time, and it's. We had a few guests as well on this album. We had Mika, who plays keyboards from Finland. And it does organically grow. The track does actually just grow. And it's just really amazing for me to go from the demo to what it ends up being as, you know?
Yeah, but there's a lot of
throwing goes on between us, you know. It's quite
a dramatic track, this, isn't it? Almost sinister in places, the way it starts with the kind of very Tangerine Dream kind of sequence keyboards.
Yeah.
But when the guitars come in, it has got this kind of really kind of, you know, dark feel towards it. But I just love the power of the drums when the whole band kicks in.
Yeah.
You know, when it just drives along. And about 2/3 of the way in, it kind of rolls back. And then you have this wonderful part for Glenda to do this kind of like gentle bass work, and she comes to the fore.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, is that kind of rehearsed as well? I mean,
no, it's not rehearsed at all. No, it really genuinely just organically grows as the track goes on, and it's quite wonderful, really.
To
see these things evolve. And it is incredibly rewarding, really, at the end of the day as well. I mean, Glenda, his real name's Glenn. He thinks that it's one of our best albums ever.
I would certainly go along with that. Neptune and Hangman is on side two. And this, because I know you're down as Pete Bingham, guitars, bass synth, mellotron guitar, and field recordings. Now,
there's always field recordings in all of our tracks, you know, whether they're really buried or it's just.
Were they on side two? A chunk of field recordings?
Yeah. It's all throughout the whole album.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sometimes you can't quite hear it, but it is there.
It's there, is it?
Yeah.
And so tell me about the field recordings, and how do you, is this something you just go out for walks and you're just recording all the time, or?
Yeah. Well, I have this digital Tascam recorder.
Yeah.
Which is always in my bag. And whenever I'm anywhere, whether it's in nature or crazy things, I just record everything. You know, I love walking on the beach in the winter.
Yeah,
just recording sea and rivers. It adds to that organicness of the tracks, and I do really love it. You know, it's really it adds that extra little dimension to it.
It's kind of it's almost like the future of prog, isn't it? To see people down as field recording should be down as the kind of instrumentation, percussion, field recordings. Brilliant. but it's a wonderful track. Great driving kind of rhythms as well. There's kind of, I noticed on this on your other albums, there is definitely a kind of, it's hidden. So if I say to people now listening to this, there is Hawkwind in there, people will go, yeah, I can feel that. But there's also a bit of Sabbath as well.
Oh, yeah. Very much so, yeah. Especially on the last album, the One Man's Man.
Yeah.
That was very Sabbath-inspired beginning to that album with the whole church bell, which I recorded in Bath. And it was just, yeah. But these are all bands that we loved as teenagers, as kids. You know, I remember going to see, first band I ever saw was Pink Floyd on the Dark Side of the Moon, end of the Dark Side of the Moon tour. Then I saw Gong, then I saw Hawkwind. And I guess in many ways, my life was never going to be the same, really. You know, once you've been exposed to that kind of almost madness, really, you know, the madness of music. And it was, and then I discovered all the kind of German bands, Neu and Kahn and Faust. And I think that's always been with me. And that was the whole reason why we actually started Sendelica, as we covered in the last podcast, was that it was to revisit the music of our past, of our childhoods, but to drag it kicking and screaming into the 21st century.
But you've also, I think, because your releases come from the Fruits de Mer label and your relationship with them, I mean, that label is almost like a band in itself, that it's become collectible as a band. People are like, there are like fans of a record label. People
just buy things that are on the label, yeah.
They do, yeah.
Yeah.
And also because I think I mentioned this last time we spoke, that people hark back to like the golden age of Island Records and artists being allowed to do what they like. But in a way, they weren't allowed to do exactly as they like you are. You know, any of your albums couldn't have been. You might say that Sendelica is kind of like, has got one foot in the late 60s, early 70s, and the other foot is striding forwards into the future.
Yeah.
But none of your albums could have been released back then because nobody would have allowed them to go out.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. I was watching an interview with Frank Zappa very recently, and he was saying that the music moguls of the 60s were fat cigar-smoking guys who knew nothing about music. Yeah. And he actually loved that era because they didn't know anything about music. So they allowed anyone to do anything. Basically, we were throwing stuff against the wall to see if it stuck. But it was only then as we came into the 70s that Frank felt that they were the dictators. They were trying to tell people what was good music. And that, unfortunately, stops a lot of things happening, you know, that are amazing.
Very true. And then the next ones we've got Magician Dawn and then Tower of Chaos. Tower of Chaos is probably my second favourite track. And because it kind of, part of this almost just hangs in the air, like it just floats.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just there. And I said in my review that I thought, well, it's instrumental music. I've got stuff to do that day. And I thought, well, I'll have this on in the background and I'll just... Because you'd think this kind of music that's kind of like very ambient, some people thought, oh, it's the kind of thing you can have on in the background. I mean, I can do that with Tangerine Dream, I have to say. No offense to Tangerine Dream, but I can. But with Sendelica, you can't. It's kind of really strange. It sits in the atmosphere of the room. It's playing, but you can't kind of do something else. If you're going to make, it's the soundtrack to going to make a cup of tea, but once you've made your cup of tea, you need to sit down and listen to it. It's kind of... Even though there aren't necessarily things to latch onto, like really complex progressive rock or something, it's it's hard to explain. And I've reviewed this.
I think you're actually touching on to one of the things that really kind of inspires us, is that there is a lot of repetition goes on with what we're doing, but it's repetition that's changing. So there's always things happening. There's always things bubbling under, always things coming to the front. And it's just that kind of thing that makes you want to really listen to it.
Yeah, it is. It's because mentioning that there's field recordings on every track, each time you listen to it, and you try and focus on something else that maybe you didn't listen to that next time, something else comes out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a casserole pot of tunes, all in one big pot.
It's all encompassing, you know, you have to delve into it.
I mentioned earlier about there isn't really anyone that stretches steps forward for like, you know, big keyboard solos or guitar solos, but I've got to mention my favorite guy on the album, which is Lee Rolfe on sax.
Yeah.
Because his playing, I think, really makes these albums, and especially your production of the sax sound sitting in the soundscape.
Well, it becomes kind of very ethereal.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Very, you know, it's not like a sax solo or a...
No, it's like it's like he's playing on the top of Glastonbury Tour or something. It's just floating down the hills towards you, isn't it, in the wind?
Yeah.
And if the wind changes direction, it'd be a bit further away or a bit closer. That's the kind of feel I get from it.
It was really funny because when we did our first album with Colin, which was called Spaceman Bubblegum, we were signed to a Russian label. And he just left us playing. We had a mobile studio and we were playing in a barn, and it was like in February. It was bitterly cold. And he just went away, and he went away for a few hours. And then he suddenly came back in the room and he goes, "Oh yeah, it just sounds like Hawkwind at the top of the stairs now. So I think we'll just record now," you know? So it is that kind of, that kind of otherworldliness of music that...
Yeah, yeah, because I've mentioned this in my reviews when I spoke to you last. It's as if it's a club, and it's downstairs. It's down two flights of stairs, and you're standing outside, and you're thinking, "Shall I go in?" And you can hear this music coming up the stairs, and there's an aspect to the production that is that sound that it sounds like it's in another room, but when you go down the stairs and you're expecting to be face to face with the music in completely directly at you, there are still aspects of it that sound like they're still a staircase away, but other parts of the music is right in front of you. It's an amazing production sound, and I can't really think of anything else that sounds anything like it.
Yeah. Well, that's really, really pleasing to hear. It is. It's very ethereal, very otherworldly, but there's also that directness in it. You know, some of the drum beats and stuff are very in your face.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
That's going back to our kind of metoric kind of love, you know, of the metoric beat. It's, but I think just the whole thing is very different. It's very different to what anyone else is doing.
You've had some fantastic reviews on this album, which I've seen you post.
Amazing. I mean, Keith came everywhere. up to Cardigan a couple of weekends ago, and he just said that it's possibly the most reviewed album he's ever put out. Yeah, and it's just really nice. It just almost makes it seem justified, you know.
Yeah, and you've had some really good coverage, haven't you? You've been in Prog magazine, you've been everywhere, haven't you? So
we have Prog magazine, Classic Rock magazine, Record Collector, everything. It's just been really, really incredibly positive reviews. And yourself, very good reviews. But it kind of makes you want to do another one, you know. It is really good.
Because I know that your music is only available physically, isn't it? You're not on.
Well, we do the downloads on Bandcamp, but we don't stream. There's a greatest kind of compilation on Spotify and Apple Music and everything. Yeah. But other than that, no. Yeah.
And are all your albums, some of them are out of print, aren't they? Because it is
very much. Yeah. I think all the ones on Fruit de Mer or either just a couple of copies left, or they've completely sold out. Yeah.
So it's each wave of that come in from each new album. I mean, are there plans to kind of like reissue some of them to so people have a chance to?
Well, we have reissued stuff in the past. Yeah. We have, you know, we've done licensing deals with labels in Germany and Italy, and when they've kind of sold out, the rights return back to us. So it's very much in our hands what to do again. And I think there are plans afoot to do a massive CD box set of these four albums when the last album is out and sold. There's
that'll be fantastic. And do you have a, because obviously there are four tracks on this, it's a double album. There outtakes?
Yeah, there's loads of different mixes, and there's the demos, and a lot.
And
we have these mixes where we're kind of toing and froing stuff, and there's a lot of really interesting stuff on them. Yeah,
and that's the other thing. Are you, when you record, are you in the same studio together, or is it all done remotely?
No, it's all done remote. This series of albums all being done remotely, whereas the Cromlech albums, which was the series of albums we did before this series, they were all recorded at a studio called Monkey Studio, which has a huge Cromlech actually in its garden.
Wow.
Yeah, which is quite amazing.
And what's the difference? Is it different to the creative aspect of it by all being in the same room?
It is, because when we did the four Cromlech albums, we kind of, when we got to four, which I can see on the floor there, we just really wanted to mix it up and try something different. The whole Cromlech things have been that we actually recorded over a long weekend, and we had loads of guests come and play with us, and we just all jammed in the main room and stuff. And then we took those away and we kind of added to them and took away from them and mixed them and decimated them, really. But this series of albums, we really wanted to try a different approach. And I think it's been very successful in many ways.
Totally. I suppose it takes a lot of pressure off people as well from the fact that they can just record it. And
the pressure is from Fritz de Meur, who said, "Well, you have to have it to me by such and such a date, or else it won't come out this year." And this new album we have to have done by the end of this month. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what plans have you got to play live? I know you've got a big kind of festival later in the year, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got a few gigs kind of. We've got a support slot with Acid Mother's Temple, who is one of my favourite bands who I've seen. I think I've seen them live about 14 times now. And then we've got the Summer Festival, which Man are playing at this year. And then I think we've got a gig at the end of May with Osric Tentacles in Bath, which would be really looking forward to.
And what can people expect from a live Sendelica gig?
Because completely different.
Yeah. I had a feeling what I was going.
We only play live as a trio. So, So that's very different as well. And we kind of have this thing where we try and explore some of the back catalogue and try and take it to places which we haven't been to before with the tracks, which makes for interesting gigs.
Yeah. And how many tracks would be in a typical Sendelica set list?
Probably five or six tracks over an hour and a half. Yeah.
Well, that's that's not bad. I thought you were going to say three. Yeah.
We're actually trying to do a couple of the new tracks from the album that hasn't come out yet, to mess around with those a bit live as well. So,
would you do anything from this at all?
Probably not. No. But there is a couple of tracks on the next album that are lending themselves to us exploring live. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. And so of all the members of the band, do you all have the same kind of musical influences? Obviously, I know that Hawkwind, Nick Turner, that kind of sound, as you mentioned.
Yeah, well, Lee and Glenn, Glenda, as he's known as on the album.
Yeah.
They actually played in Nick Turner's All-Stars. That's how, mm-hmm. how they knew each other. And Colin he produced Nick's final album, which we all played on. And he's really missed as Nick. It was sad when he passed away. And we have quite a big connection with that kind of side of Hawkwind.
Yeah. So if you had to pick a Hawkwind album that was at the top of your, you know, the one to go for.
Well,
which
live, it has to be Space Ritual. I mean, Space Ritual kind of was one of the first Hawkwind albums I discovered. And it is just, it's just mesmerizing even now to listen to it, you know. But I think studio-wise, probably Warrior on the Edge of Time is just a great classic album.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. So where is the best place people to go to get their Sendelica albums and merch and find out all about you?
Yeah, well, it's Sendelica's Bandcamp page, but all the vinyl of that is sold out now. But I think Keith still has a few copies left. But I know the distributor in Holland, he's completely sold out now as well. So,
is it available on CD?
Yeah, to CD, yeah.
So you can still get it on CD?
Yeah.
And are any of the other albums still available on CD at all?
Yeah, there's a few of them. Yeah. So happily troll through Sendelica Bandcamp.
Yeah, so go to Sendelica Bandcamp, and obviously as Pete says, there are a few albums still you can get on CD. And I know I'm showing you the vinyl, but the CD is just as good. As you know, I'm multi-format man on Now Spinning Magazine.
Well, the great thing about the CD is you don't have to turn it over.
Yeah.
always to be appreciated.
It does, but to think that idea of not being disturbed, at least with the vinyl, you know that 20 minutes time you will be able to get off the sofa. Obviously, yeah. I'm thinking about listening to Sendelica on CD means that for at least an hour and a bit, you're not going to move.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Which maybe is a good thing. That's what the world needs. We just need to all be still and slow down. Yes, well, thanks very much, Pete. Thank you for your time. And it's great to hear that, yes, there's another album literally being finished off as we speak.
Yes, indeed.
And remember, Sendelica Bandcamp if you want to buy any CDs, and keep an eye out in any vinyl comes back. But keep me in touch with what's going on, and, you know, stay safe, and hopefully the gigs go well as well.
Certainly will do, Phil. Thank you very much, Fred. Cheers.
All right. Thank you. So thank you to my guest, Pete Bingham from the band Sendelica, psychedelic prog, but a band that doesn't follow any rules. And what I love about them, and you've seen me review the albums on the YouTube channel, on the website, is their sense of wonder in how they create music. This new one is just as good as anything they've ever done, and you can still get them on CD. The vinyl is literally completely sold out. So go to sendelica.bandcamp.com to buy directly from the artist. And I just think why I like them is this sense of wonder that Pete has and the other guys in the band, where they obviously demo stuff, as Pete was saying. And then when they get into the studio, whether they're together remotely or whatever, they just create this music that is like a soundscape for your ears, where literally just everyday life of going to make a cup of tea can have Sendelica in the background. It's just like the perfect music for just giving you this kind of whirlwind and wonderful backdrop, literally, of art that just hangs in the air and just immerses you. It's been immersed in music. There's driving sections. Again, there's no mad soloing or anything, but the music and the way the instrumentation comes forwards and slides backwards is just perfect for this kind of ambient art. Literally, it is like film for your ears, where you supply the visuals, but Sendelica supply the soundtrack. I just love them. I just absolutely love this band. So thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Please subscribe to the podcast, to the YouTube channel. Check out the website, join the Facebook group, join us on Instagram, X, TikTok, LinkedIn, wherever else you'll find the Now Spinning Multiverse will be there waiting for you. So take care. Remember, music is the healer and the doctor. Keep spinning those discs, and I shall see you all very, very soon.